I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. It's Midday with the mayor. Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott joins me. The city's intractable epidemic of homicides continues. Governor Larry Hogan has been critical of the mayor and other city leaders. Can the city count on the state's assistance to turn the tide? Will the mayor sign a controversial bill giving renters alternatives to security deposits? How will the city spend the $670 million federal dollars that are headed our way under the American Rescue Plan? And what further changes to the rules around tax sales can we expect in the future? Plus, archaeologist Dr. Julie Shablitsky talks about a stunning discovery on the Eastern Shore that unearths new information about Harriet Tubman. First, the news.
So it comes down to J.P. Crawford. First pitch swinging, line drive, he's done it. John Means has no hit. The Mariners and the Orioles mob him. The first no-hitter for the Orioles in 30 years. The first complete game no-hitter since Jim Palmer did it 52 years ago in 1969.
Scott Garceau with the call yesterday as Baltimore Orioles pitcher John Means makes history with his no-hitter and gives us something to smile about. So congratulations to pitcher Means. Good afternoon and welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. That clip courtesy of Masson. And this political news, we learned today that the already long list of possible gubernatorial candidates next year will not include a prominent politician who had been considering a run for the state's top job. WIPR's John Lee reported this morning that Johnny Olszewski Jr. will seek a second term as Baltimore County executive instead of joining the crowded field of Democrats competing in the primary for governor. Today on Midday, it's Midday with the mayor. Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott joins me for his monthly visit to our program. He's here until the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or a comment for the mayor, you are welcome to join us. We'll try to get as many calls in as we can. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. Mr. Mayor, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Tom. And I think that was great news yesterday. They're now calling that no-hitter old Strohs and no-nos, hon. That's what we're calling Mr. Means no-hitter. It was a great thing to see.
No-nos, indeed. I want to talk to you, speaking of no-nos, this little feud between you and the governor, which broke out on Twitter a day or two ago. You and the governor have very different views about what public safety should entail. You have very different approaches to it. He complained about the violent crime and called it unacceptable. That's exactly the same word you used just a few days ago to talk about it as well. He says we need better laws. Lord knows what that means. He says we need a prosecutor who's willing to prosecute crime. So that's a swipe at State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby and her decision to not pursue certain kinds of crimes in favor of pursuing other ones. And he wants more funding for police. And you've talked about reimagining public safety so that there is a different allocation of the funds that are currently directed towards the police. You can understand how it drives people nuts that the two biggest and most important leaders at our city and our state are feuding with each other. You have evidently agreed, or the governor has agreed, to take a meeting with you, but you have not met with him more than once or twice so far since you were inaugurated in December. Is that right?
Yeah. And Tom, I think, let me first start off by saying where I come from in Park Heights, it takes two people to beef. I don't have a beef with the governor. It's unfortunate what happened the other day, what he said the other day was unfortunate. But the reality, as I said to you before on your show, is that I've been asking for a meeting with the governor around public safety since I won the primary last year. Consistently asked for that. Asked in our first meeting to restart the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council underneath the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. We've been ready to sit at the table from day one. I was happy that a few weeks ago they did agree to have our staffs meet. And what my deputy mayor and my chief of staff and police commissioner told me is that meeting went well, but then there was no follow up. What the governor did the other day is what he did. But for me, that's over. I'm going to go to this meeting, present the things that I think we need to be working better together on. For example, restarting that criminal justice coordinating committee, but also talking about how we can coordinate in better efforts. All right. Well, we have 24 homicide victims this year that were on under the supervision of PNP, parole and probation, how we can utilize our state agencies to help us in the fight for violent crime. That's the stuff that I'm working and looking forward to doing. Everything else doesn't matter to me. That's just a political talking point for Twitter or for a certain news organization. I'm concerned about these neighborhoods. That's where I spend my time. That's where I am. That's what I do.
Some of your predecessors have pointed to the involvement of the state as being one of the great helps to the city, a great form of assistance and source of assistance. The state police doing things like helping with events or serving warrants or traffic control. The O'Malley administration, the Dixon administration had help from Annapolis, offered help to the Baltimore City Police Department. And in those years, indeed, violence and numbers of homicides were down. So as you walk into this meeting with the governor, and you disagree perhaps fundamentally about what law enforcement should look like and how it should be approached, but walk us through the first few things you say to the governor to find some place where you guys can really work together and we can move the needle about what's going on the streets of our city.
Well, Tom, what I'll say is, without getting into specific, because my request to the governor and his team was to...
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, do we have you?
Can you hear me?
Yep, there we go. We lost you for a second, but we got you back. So I'm sorry, continue.
I'm sorry about that. Something crazy happened with Zoom, so I'm sorry about that. But what I will say is, because I asked for this not to go like it has in the past, where they have a meeting and then they walk out and say, hey, that all these things were or were not happening. That's not the way I want to go. What I'm going to do is go in there and do like I have before, because I think you'll remember that even in 2017, it was me that worked with Kiefer Mitchell and suggested to him then Mayor Pugh and I were having a feud about their inability to have a focus on violent crime, to say, hey, we need state police operating back in the city of Baltimore. We need that collaboration. And we're going to go to the table talking to the governor and his team about what the focus are, how we're working on violent groups, how we're going to be working on guns, where we're going to be operating, and where we know we need assistance from them and where we need collaboration. That's the only thing to talk about. Everything else doesn't matter. It's how can we work together as the two chief executives that have the highest level of responsibility for lives in Baltimore to come to some agreement on working together? Because you're right, it worked a lot better when the state was more involved, and that's what I hope to have that happening again.
Yeah, and listeners should know that to a large extent, the governor, you know, abrogates his own responsibility for safety in the city of Baltimore. It's the state's largest city, and he's in charge as much as you are. And I'm glad to hear that the meeting's going to take place, and that you know you're somewhat optimistic about a positive outcome. Along those same lines, should citizens be concerned, for example, about the enmity that appears to exist between state's attorney Marilyn Mosby and the U.S. attorney Leo Wise, because it's been announced, acknowledged by the Mr. and Mrs. Mosby's attorneys that there is a federal investigation, which they, the attorneys, characterize as a criminal tax investigation into the Mosby household. This is, again, another instance in which, you know, federal law enforcement is supposed to be working with local law enforcement. Do you have any concerns that that relationship is damaged, that that relationship makes it untenable for the U.S. Attorney's Office to help the state's attorney?
Listen, what I'll say is, first, we know that those investigations will start and they will end at some point. But I think it's important to Tom, for me to talk about how my administration, the folks that work with me, work with our federal partners. And we have a great working relationship. I know that I'm going to be talking with our, we know we're getting a new and a acting U.S. attorney for Baltimore in a few weeks. I've met with the folks that are running like the other federal leads for us, and we're going to have a great relationship with them. We're looking to further deepen that partnership. I know that cases are still going on at the local and federal level where they're working together, despite everything that's going on with that investigation. Folks that are professional attorneys, professional crime fighters, like the folks who work for the U.S. attorney, are going to do their job regardless. They know how to get those things done. They're working with our police department each and every day. And I'm confident that we'll continue to do that while that other stuff works itself out.
My guest is Mayor Brandon Scott. It's Midday with the Mayor. I'm Tom Hall. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. Mr. Mayor, we have a number of comments about the bill concerning renters' rights and alternatives to security deposits. Carol Ott, who is a tenant advocate. She's with Fair Housing Action Center of Maryland. I'd like to know if the mayor plans to veto Baltimore's bad security deposit bill that would open the door for yet another predatory company to extract money from Baltimore's tenants. That's Carol's take on the bill. Let's go to the phones to Gwen Dubois, who's calling from Baltimore. And I understand you are a physician. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. I'm an internal medicine and with public health degree with Chesapeake Physicians for Social Responsibility. So we really, as physicians, see housing as health. It's a social determinant of health, and the city has a housing crisis. And I want to know, it's a sort of the same kind of question. How will it help to have a surety bond which allows for-profit companies to make money off of people who are already stressed about paying for housing? And there were a bunch of groups that were supporting housing, low-income housing, who jumped off the CB210022 called the Rhino Bill when this became part of it, that they're a for-profit and the surety bond part of it. So unless it's amended, I'm hoping the mayor will veto the bill.
All right. Mr. Mayor, explain briefly to folks who aren't deeply in the weeds on this what the bill says it will do and your feelings about it.
Yeah, listen, we know that we need, there has to be some alternatives for security deposits where folks who are renting sometimes are being asked to put months ahead of payments ahead in security deposits. And what I believe in the sponsor's intent was to try to bring some sense of help in that case. What I will say about the bill is that I'm reviewing the research and looking at the information that's out there, along with talking to the sponsor and everyone else to make the best decisions for Baltimore. I have until May the 17th to make my decision. This bill moved swiftly through the council and ultimately got the support of 12 members. But I've also seen the organizing efforts on the ground. And as someone who represented Northeast and East and South Baltimore and Southeast Baltimore for a long time, I've seen how security deposit can be a barrier for people. And we know it shouldn't be that way, right? I've seen how it impacts my neighbors, my staff, and I have met with the sponsor and the council president's office and talked to many of the advocates who've been reaching out about this bill. This is a deeply complex issue, and I'm not going to rush the decision to make sure that we're getting to the best decision for Baltimore in due time.
Well, of course, just so listeners are clear, a number of housing organizations and other organizations. We have an email from Caitlin, who says she's in the 12th district, says that the Baltimore Teachers Union has issued a statement in solidarity with tenants and other advocacy organizations, and they are urging you to veto the bill. So there's certainly plenty of opposition to this bill, but City Council President Nick Mosby and Sharon Green Middleton, the sponsor of the bill, very much in favor of it. Let's go to the phones to Mount Vernon, where Tisha is on the line. Welcome to Midday with Mayor Scott.
Yes, good Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon, Mayor. I'd like to ask you to please address, you had a transition team in place. You coalesced these individuals, community leaders and advocates, and all kinds of experts to inform how your administration would approach certain issues. And I'd like for you to please take the time to address why community land trusts, CLTs, even though one of your teams came back and indicated that it was definitely should be a priority in addressing housing equity and racial equity, also development without displacement, why it was not included in the official document, in the official report. If you could address that, please, I would greatly appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Thanks for your call, Tisha. Mr. Mayor?
Two things. One, I will say that one, that it wasn't included in the transition document, and we talked about that a lot, but more importantly, that we just on the 25th of March awarded some grants, $2.2 million to support three community land trusts. And this is just a start for us here in Baltimore. So this is something that we're going to be looking to build support from, and that we've already started following us taking office, and not that long after the transition team's report was put out.
And Mr. Mayor, when it comes to the American Rescue Plan, the $670 million over the next 2 years that is expected to come to the city, give us a sense of the timeline. When can people expect decisions will be made about how to allocate that money? What is the process that you're going to be involved in? And what are your own personal feelings about how that money should be dedicated?
No, thank you. And the first part, Tom, I want everyone to hear me very, very clearly about. I've said time and time again that I am going to be trying to making sure that this money is spent in a way that helps Baltimore's business and people recover from COVID. But also I'm going to be very interested in projects that invest in our neighborhoods that have been left behind, our people that have been left behind, our local Black, brown, and women-owned businesses that have struggled to get investments, opportunities.
Can you give us an example? Give us an example of the kinds of programs.
No, I cannot. Because the most important portion, and this was for a lot of folks who have ideas about how we should specifically spend the money, the most important part hasn't happened yet, Tom. Because I could say I want to give it to YPR to build a studio to help young people learn how to work in media. But if that's not a appropriate use by the federal guidelines, it doesn't matter what I think. We still are awaiting the detailed federal guidance about exactly how we can spend the dollars. And so far, we received one paragraph, and we're pressing our folks and trying to work with Treasury and our congressional folks and our partners in the federal government to get that. And once we receive that, we will be able to talk freely about the things that we want. But I don't want to get people's hopes up on things. And my focus right now is building that robust and ambitious process that allows us to maximize the impact of these historic dollars and be transparent about how we're spending them. And as I said to the vice president last week, if I could had the time, I would have thanked her 670 million times. And we're going to do that in a way that gets these dollars out through a lens of equity. We're going to be working with a website that allow people access to the information. And I do want to let folks know there's going to be an internal process to receive money for city agencies, but there will be funding available through that for external organizations. And you guys will hear more from me and my team about this in the coming weeks. And we're expected to start to get that out as soon as we possibly can this spring and summer.
As I understand it, your cabinet is now fully in place. Have you been meeting with the cabinet regularly? What are you hearing from the heads of your agencies? What are you learning now in these first few months of your administration about the interagency cooperation that we have, the level of that cooperation, and the needs that the agencies are telling you the city needs?
Well, I think the most important thing that I'm hearing from my agency heads is that they finally believe, and not just myself, but the team with the city administrator, the deputy mayors that we have a team of folks who are really committed to the city and the best interest in the city and not the best interest of the person sitting in my chair. they have also been very pleased with our ability to do just that, that there haven't been. And folks, Tom, you hear me say this a lot, that there hasn't really been an administration that's forced agencies to work together, that's broken down the silos, that's talked about that deep structural reform, that's allowed agency heads to feel free to come up with big, bold ideas and feel free to stop doing things that the agency has done for 30 years just because they've always done it. And we're looking forward to building that out and pressuring our agencies to be better, but also allowing them to flourish, because silos don't mean anything for me. The person that is picking up mixed refuse will be treated the same by me and everyone else in this administration than the person who's at the top of the agency.
Do you meet with the cabinet regularly, and how is that structured?
We actually just had a cabinet meeting last week. Of course, it's a little different now because it's virtual. We went through a lot of things last week, talking about setting up, you know, the infrastructure internal about the ARP, hearing from Dr. Durazo, talking with our agency heads about how we're doing with vaccinations and things like that, but also hearing from agency heads about some of the great work that's going on and the needs they have. And our deputy mayors and deputy CEO are always consistently working with them to make sure that that happens as well.
You have a new head of the Department of Public Works. We just got 20 seconds left. We have a emailer who wants to know about potholes and roads. What are your plans?
Yeah, we have a pothole challenge right now going on with the Department of Transportation. So if you go to my Twitter account or the Department of Transportation's Twitter account, we want people to hashtag us, take a picture, and we're going to come out and fill them. And maybe you'll get lucky, and I might be the person that fills your pothole. And we'll be announcing the stuff that we're doing with roads. There are a lot of roads that will be resurfaced this summer, but also trying to highlight the need for the president's infrastructure bill that will help us do a lot more of them.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I know we got to let you go. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott, thank you, sir. Talk to you next time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, Dr. Julie Shablitsky is an archaeologist who led a team of researchers on a dig at the Eastern Shore. It's led to new discoveries about the early life of Harriet Tubman. We'll talk about it after a quick break. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.